Good morning. The open meeting of the Federal Election Commission for December 14, 2023 will come to order. We have a packed agenda, so let's get started. First up is Draft Advisory Opinion 2023-08, request from Cowboy Analytics. We have Eric Wang here on behalf of the requester. Feel free to come up to the table. We have counsel for the commission. Are we ready?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Good morning, commissioners. Agenda documents 2328A and 2328B are our alternative draft responses to an advisory opinion request submitted by Cowboy Analytics LLC. The requester proposes to establish a non-connected conduit political committee, the PAC, that would solicit and forward contributions earmarked for candidate committees. The PAC would operate a website offering contributors merchandise imprinted with political messages in exchange for making contributions through the PAC to the selected candidates, and would deduct a portion of each contribution to cover its costs before forwarding to the designated candidates. The requester also proposes a second scenario where the PAC would solicit the purchase of its political merchandise separately from the making of any earmarked contributions. After an individual completes their purchase, they would then be encouraged to make an earmarked contribution to a candidate. The request asks a number of questions about the treatment of contributions to the PAC and to candidate committees, and whether the PAC's costs for producing the merchandise and soliciting contributions would constitute independent expenditures. Within each draft, the same conclusions are reached regarding the two proposed scenarios. Drafts A and B both conclude that the costs the PAC proposes to deduct from an earmarked contribution would be contributions to the PAC and not contributions to the designated candidates, and that the PAC's payments for the production and distribution of merchandise would not constitute in-kind contributions from the PAC to the candidates receiving the earmarked contributions. Drafts A and B reach different conclusions about whether the PAC would have to report its costs of producing and distributing the merchandise or its costs to solicit earmarked contributions as independent expenditures. Draft A concludes that neither the merchandise nor the solicitation costs would constitute independent expenditures, while draft B concludes that both the merchandise and solicitation costs would constitute independent expenditures to the extent they contain express advocacy. We received one comment on the request and no comments on the draft. Happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Colleagues, any discussion or questions?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you to policy for the presentation and all the work on the drafts. Question for counsel for the requester. You did not submit any written comments about the two drafts. As counsel just explained, there are diverging outcomes with respect to the solicitation costs and then the production and distribution costs and the merchandise and whether those are reportable as independent expenditures. I'm interested in your views on those, on that issue or those two issues, and whether one draft is correct over the other, or what your views are on the merits of those issues.
Good morning. Thank you, Commissioner Cooksey, and fellow commissioners. So it won't surprise you to know that I have my own personal views on which draft I believe reaches the right outcome and has the right analysis, but I am not here to represent my own personal views on this matter. So I'll just say, for my client's purposes, they are able to operate under either draft, and they are also able to operate under both drafts, essentially, if the commission were to deadlock on the IE reporting issues for questions 3 and 4 regarding the merchandise costs and the solicitation costs. So, you know, whether the commission reaches a consensus or a deadlock, our client is grateful for the guidance given by both drafts, and we thank the commissioners and the OGC staff for addressing the questions. And I'm happy to answer any other questions the commissioners may have.
Great. Colleagues, any further discussion? Okay, let's move on to motions. Mr. Broussard.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And thank you to council for that answer that gives some assurance, I think, across the commission. I am going to be moving for draft B. And so my motion is NAO 2023-08 Cowboy Analytics LLC. I move approval of agenda document 2328B, draft B.
Any discussion of the motion before we actually vote. Let me just say that I'm going to be abstaining from voting on this draft. While I agree with the ultimate conclusions on it, I don't agree with all the analysis. And because I believe this draft is not going to be getting four votes, I'm not going to trouble everyone with making those changes for a draft that no one is going to vote for. So I will stick with abstaining here. So colleagues vote. Commissioner, do you have
a... Yeah, Madam Chair, yes. While we're discussing the motion and in light of your comment, I hope you'll put those views in writing for the benefit of your colleagues and the regulated community.
Certainly. Yes. Okay, votes. All in favor?
Aye.
All opposed?
No.
The motion fails 2-3 with Commissioners Broussard and Weintraub in favor. The Vice Chair, Commissioner Traynor, and Commissioner Dickerson opposed, and I am abstaining for the motion. Mr. Vice Chair.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thanks, Mr. Wang, for that answer as well. It is very helpful. So with respect to Draft Advisory Opinion 2023-08, Cowboy Analytics, LLC, I move approval of Agenda Document Number 23-28-A, which is Draft A.
Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
All opposed?
No.
The motion fails 3-3 with the Vice Chair, Commissioner Traynor, Commissioner Dickerson in favor, and Commissioner Broussard, Weintraub, and myself opposed for the motions.
Thank you, Madam Chair. In the interest, if I could ask counsel a question. So counsel, what I would propose to do in light of the votes that we just took would be to direct OGC to attempt to draft a compromise draft that answers the questions on which those two drafts agree, and that then says that the commission was unable to give an answer for questions 3 and 4. If you have any comment on that proposal before I make it, I'd be interested in it, but that's what I would intend to do.
Yeah, I think that would be sufficient guidance for my client. Thank you.
Great.
Madam Chair, in that case, with respect to Draft Advisory Opinion 2023-08, I move to instruct the Office of General Counsel to draft a third draft response to the advisory opinion consistent with the overlapping answers of Draft A and B, and to circulate such draft for a tally vote to the Commission.
Any discussion of the motion?
Can I just ask for some further instruction about questions?
Sorry. Can I just ask for some further instruction for OGC as to questions 5 and 6 and what you'd like to...
Manager. With respect to questions 5 and 6, I believe the answers between the two drafts published were the same insofar as they said the variation didn't matter. I think... that could be included in the compromise draft C, I guess, to the extent it also isn't a comment on the merits of question 3 or 4, which is also part of that conclusion that the difference didn't change the legal outcome.
Thank you.
All right. Any discussion on the motion? All in favor?
Aye.
And the motion passes unanimously. Thank you so much. And now we are on to our regulations. Next on our agenda is Regulation 2021-01, Candidate Salaries and the Proposed Final Rule. Council.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Good morning, Commissioners. Agenda document 2330A is a draft final rules and explanation and justification on candidate salaries. The draft revises regulations concerning the use of campaign funds by a candidate's principal campaign committee to pay compensation to the candidate. The commission would be issuing these final rules in response to a petition for rulemaking filed by a former candidate for the United States House of Representatives. Given the 30-day congressional review period for final rules of the commission, the effective date of these final rules would be March 1st, 2024. I'm happy to answer any questions you have.
Thank you. And thank you for all of your incredible work on this through the hearing, through the drafting. You have been there. And I know I am certainly grateful for everything that you've done here to help us get across the finish line. Colleagues, discussion.
Madam Chair.
Sure.
I saw my colleague's eyes shift in my direction. I'd also like to thank the Office of General Counsel. This was a very long road, and without getting too into the weeds in public, I recognize there's a lot of back and forth, not always at convenient hours, and I'm personally very grateful. I'd also like to acknowledge the hard work of Commissioner Broussard and her staff. This regulatory text is very much her accomplishment, and it reflects deep engagement with all of our offices. I'll just say all of our offices, so I suspect especially mine, in advancing a bipartisan compromise. This regulation is not, to my mind, perfect, but it is an enormous improvement on the status quo. Let me begin with my doubts. There have been suggestions that candidates paying themselves salaries from campaign funds necessarily violate the law's ban on personal use. After all, that salary is then spent directly on rent, groceries, gas, and other necessities of life, many of which are explicitly banned by the statute. This is a non-trivial point and one that might be tested in court, but we do not write on a blank slate. In my judgment, we do more good in agreeing on these amendments here than we would in deadlocking on an already settled point of law. With that said, I'd like to highlight a few points. Most importantly, the commission today acknowledges that salaries to candidates are lawful where they replace actually foregone income. This regulation is not an invitation to simply pay candidates as candidates or for being a candidate, nor does it put the commission in the strange place of setting a market price for candidate services, whatever those might be. We also decline to adopt the view that candidates are mere employees of their campaign committees who may be hired, paid, fired, or replaced at will. A candidate's political committee is an anti-corruption device that segregates campaign funds and deters bribery. Voters vote for the candidate, not the candidate committee. Instead, this regulation does three important things that better align it with the stated goal of allowing individuals of modest means to campaign for office. First, it replaces the starting event for drawing a salary. Instead of using state filing deadlines, which are generally late in the process and vary widely across the states, it imposes a universal rule. A candidate may draw a salary after filing a statement of candidacy with the commission. This eliminates the arbitrary treatment of candidates based upon widely divergent state laws, and it incentivizes candidates to file a statement of candidacy, potentially eliminating thorny questions of candidate status that have bedeviled the commission for many years. Second, this regulation lowers the cap on compensation, imposing a cap of one half the salary of a member of Congress. This reflects the, to my mind, obvious fact that incumbent representatives running for re-election are still employed as members of Congress. Other candidates may also work while campaigning, but the revised cap reflects the fact that those who choose to campaign full-time are not similarly situated to individuals with ongoing responsibilities as incumbent officeholders. Third, and perhaps most fundamentally, this regulation clarifies that any outside income will be deducted from the maximum salary a candidate may receive. Again, this regulation is explicitly targeted at replacing foregone income. It is not an opportunity to supplement existing income. Because I believe those three changes in particular, there's more in them, but those are the big ones for me, are significant improvement on the existing regulation, I'm happy to support them. Again, Commissioner Broussard was the animating force behind this, and this rule is her accomplishment. But I again want to thank the Office of General Counsel, and I think we all benefited from the engaged comments and public testimony that informed our decision today. And I want to especially thank the public for their engagement. Several observers, I suspect, will see echoes of their recommendations and their commentary in this final draft. That's how this process is supposed to work. So with my thanks again to my colleagues and to the public, I look forward to supporting the draft.
Madam Chair. Thank you, Madam Chair. I would also like to add my sincere thanks to Commissioner Dickerson, Commissioner Broussard, and the Chair for their efforts to bring this rulemaking to resolution, and note that my vote today comes down to a genuine disagreement about the law. My opposition to this rule is not necessarily a reflection of my views on whether candidates should be able to pay themselves a salary from the funds given to their campaigns, although I do have concerns about that as a policy matter. Rather, my vote is an expression of my opinion that the statute we administer does not create space for us to pass this rule. As former Commissioner Brad Smith candidly acknowledged when he testified before us, It is wrong to turn. It was a wrong turn that the commission took many years ago. And I just don't see a sufficiently compelling reason to double down on that error. This new rule does not solve the fundamental problem that Congress did not, when it passed FECA, create an exception for the personal use prohibition to allow candidates to draw a salary from campaign funds. 52 U.S.C. 30114B is very clear that a contribution or donation to a principal campaign committee shall not be converted by any person to personal use. The statute continues on to list specific prohibited expenses, including a home mortgage, rent, utility payments, clothing purchases, and non-campaign related automobile expenses, or any household food items. But under the candidate salary regime, while a candidate may not withdraw $2,000 from their campaign bank account to make a mortgage payment, that same candidate could pay herself $2,000 from her campaign's funds and use that money to make the same mortgage payment. How the former is prohibited personal use, whereas the latter is not, boggles my mind. And it is not at all clear to me why the commission has extended the candidate salary allowance only to congressional and not to presidential candidates. So while I appreciate the work my colleagues have done to create an easier to understand and administer candidate salary regime, because all too often our rules are complex and difficult to comply with anyways, I cannot support this rule. I'm not unsympathetic to the demands of running for elected office, and I support the candidate recruitment and training efforts that are undertaken by party committees and nonprofits across the country. And I hope that those efforts can address some of the concerns animated by these reforms. And I sincerely appreciate all the people who took the time to testify before the commission and to file written comments. But at the end of the day, my job is to administer the statute within the bounds of the Constitution, and I am unpersuaded that this rule is within our authority to pass. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Commissioner Broussard. Thank you, Madam Chair. First, I'd like to thank my colleagues, both the colleagues that have spoken today. I appreciate the words that you have said, not only congratulating the staff and myself, but also speaking and sharing your views on where we might be diverging, because I think that that's where real understanding for everyone outside could understand the amount of work that it's taken for us to get here today. So I'm gonna close with thanking the staff, and the main person to thank is sitting right next to me. So I will close with you. Mm-hmm. But today I am pleased that the commission is voting on these new regulations on when a candidate can use campaign funds for their own compensation. This project started in 2021 with a petition for rulemaking submitted by Nabila Islam, a former candidate for the U.S. Senate House of Representatives, I might be predicting a future right there, who knows, and a current member of the Georgia State Senate. I want to thank Senator Islam for her efforts to bring about these changes. The changes in the final rule will help ordinary working class Americans to represent their communities by running for federal office. In particular, the new regulations will now allow a candidate to begin drawing compensation for their campaign, starting on the date that they file their statement of candidacy. And this new provision reflects the realities of running for federal office, which often involves full-time campaigning, beginning more than a year before the election. Candidates will also be able to continue to draw compensation for 20 days after their end of the candidacy to allow for a period of winding down. Finally, under the new regulations, the compensation cap will now be based on a candidate's average earned income over a longer look-back period, rather than the single year prior to their candidacy. This will allow more people to draw compensation, including people who may have had gaps in employment due to illness, economic downturns, caregiving responsibilities, or schooling. And I'd like to thank again my colleagues on the commission, as well as OGC staff who worked on this rulemaking. So from OGC policy, I thank Mr. Joe Winsinger. Thank you very much, Joe. Commissioner Dickerson did mention that there were a lot of late hours and you were extremely patient with us. So I thank you again for that. Cheryl Helmsley, who is on screen. Thank you very much, Cheryl. Amy Rothstein, that is the team lead, and Nevin Stepanovic, who is the head of policy. I thank all of you for the work that you've done to this, and I think we'll soon realize how important it is to the American people. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. I want to add my thanks to the excellent staff who did their usual excellent work for the American people and for the commission. I want to particularly thank Commissioner Broussard and her staff, particularly Ms. Jory, for their indefatigable efforts to bring this across the finish line. I share her passion for this project, and I am grateful that we have reached this day where it looks like we're actually going to pass this rule. I think that in some ways, this is a continuation of a project that the commission has been engaged in for many years through a series of AOs addressing issues like childcare that are where the commission has recognized the difficulties of running for office for a wide variety of people. And I think the American people are better served by a Congress that looks more like the American people and is not just comprised of millionaires who can afford to take 2 years off without pay and run for office. Regular people running for office will bring the concerns of regular people to the Congress and I think make for better government. So I am very excited that we are at this point where we can vote for this today. And again, want to particularly thank my colleague, Commissioner Broussard, for helping us to reach this excellent moment. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Madam Chair, I think you're about to say motion, so I'm not sure. But Commissioner Weintraub reminded me, I was remiss, so thank you for mentioning Esther Giori, who was the lead counsel in my office for this. There are numerous people in Commissioner Dickerson's office that should be named as well, but Zach and Jen, I might mess up your last name, so I apologize. I'm not in that good frame of getting the names out correct right now, but thank you. And there were lots of staff people in everyone's office, so I thank all of them. But I wanted to make sure that I thanked Esther because she is the brain trust. So she deserves to be called out personally. If I may, Madam Chair, move the motion. Thank you. In Reg 2021-01, candidate salaries, I move approval of agenda document number 2320A.
Any discussion? Thank you, Madam Chair. Sorry, I forgot to say one other thing, which is the hearing that Commissioner Broussard and her staff organized was one of the most compelling hearings that I have seen at this commission. And I wanted to particularly thank not only Ms. Islam for bringing the petition, but for all of the witnesses, several of whom traveled at their own expense to come and tell us their personal stories. And I think they were incredibly persuasive and really added and enriched the public record.
Any further discussion of that motion? All in favor?
Aye.
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 All opposed?
No.
The motion passes 5-1 with Commissioner Broussard, Weintraub, Dickerson, and the Vice Chair and myself in favor, and Commissioner Traynor opposed. Thank you all. Next up, we have another regulation. Very big day over here at the Federal Election Commission. And a very big day for our staff in the policy division. Whenever you're ready. And let me introduce it, I'm sorry. Yeah. So excited to jump into this. So we are now on regulation 2013. Yes, that is 2013-01, technological modernization, which we lovingly call Tech Mod.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Good morning, commissioners, again. agenda document 2329A is a draft final rules and explanation and justification for technological modernization. These final rules modernize commission regulations to address electronic communications and transactions, as well as to facilitate electronic accounting, record keeping, reporting, and redesignation by political committees. The revisions also eliminate or update references to outmoded technologies. Given the 30-day congressional review period for final rules of the commission, as with the previous rulemaking, the effective date of these final rules would be March 1st, 2024. And I can answer any questions.
Thank you. Colleagues, discussion.
Yes, Commissioner Broussard. Thank you, Madam Chair. I will not have extended remarks into this one, but this is another project that, when you mentioned 2013, so it is a long time coming, but we do believe, I believe as a commission, that these are, this rule will help modernize a lot of things that have become obvious in how the way that we conduct business now. Again, this is a continuation of what I call the B&D team, which is the Broussard and Dickerson team that have worked together to accomplish this. It can be a challenging working relationship, but I enjoyed the path there. So I thank my colleague for many late discussions and digging into the realms of technology that I admit that I have very limited expertise. I've probably done more study of internet, IT, all of these things that I've ever done in my entire life. And that's directly why I went to law school, so I wouldn't have to do those things. But this is where life comes full circle and helps you learn some new things. It's been a pleasure, as always, working with you, Commissioner Dickerson, and I'm glad that we can reach some resolution to something that has been around in this agency for a while. So I like to tell everyone, take note, we're getting it done. Doesn't always happen when we want it, but this is an effort to show that this commission is a strong working body and we are accomplishing these tasks. So thank you very much.
Madam Chair. In contrast, Commissioner Broussard, I have roughly an hour of remarks on the fine points of payment processing and service of process, which I will forego in the interest of not being murdered by my colleagues. Thank you, Madam Chair. Once again, the Commission is successfully taking up a rulemaking that lay dormant for more than a decade. And once again, I want to thank Commissioner Broussard for being a strong partner in resurrecting and finalizing that effort. This is, as I joked, a long and technical document, and it's been in the public domain for some time. So I want to highlight only one portion, the updated definition of public communication and internet public communication. These terms now reach certain communications that are promoted for a fee on the internet. I want to emphasize the Commission's interpretation of that language. We're including, within both definitions, the circumstance for an advertising platform is itself directly paid to boost or expand the viewership of content containing express advocacy or soliciting contribution. The Commission is not including instances where an individual and not the advertising platform itself is paid to create or share political content. Nor the definitions encompass instances where individuals make decisions about what content to share with their own audiences. The Jersey Shore Snooki, to take an example I learned of from the record, remains free to advocate for candidates of her choice to her own social media audience. Similarly, the definitions excluding staffing and other input costs used to create and post electoral messages, it is only the payments to advertising platforms themselves that are covered. Regulation also provides long necessary updates to a range of technical and payment related questions, and I encourage campaign professionals to consult those changes. I also fervently hope, this is very sincere, that these changes will promote efficiency here at the Commission for our already overworked staff. Like many important things, this regulation is technical and maybe a bit dull. I'm especially grateful for the many comments that we've received over the decades since it was first proposed, and to the work of the Office of General Counsel, going through all of the minutiae and the line-by-line edits of this very long and difficult document. I appreciate the public's patience with us as the years tick down without resolution, and I sincerely hope that today's vote will reward their patience.
Thank you.
Thanks, Madam Chair. I want to echo a lot of the comments that Commissioner Dickerson made about this rulemaking, which I genuinely believe may be one of the most important rulemakings the Commission has done in many number of years. And that's not to speak badly about the other rules that the Commission has promulgated recently, but really to emphasize how critical this one is. While all the technological updates, I think, are very important and maybe overdue, the most critical part of this rulemaking, as Commissioner Dickerson highlighted, are the changes to the definitions of public communication and internet public communication, or maybe more importantly, what's not being changed. The Commission's 2006 rulemaking establishing what is known today as the internet exemption has been one of the most critical protections for free speech on the internet in modern American law. The rule exempts from regulation posts and communications placed on the internet for free and has limited the application of the commission's various rules and limitations only to paid advertising. At the same time, in the last 17 years since the internet exemption was first put out, debates have arisen about its application and its scope. How or to what extent does the internet exemption exempt also the input costs of those communications? How does it apply to nonprofit organizations? And might various kinds of non-traditional political communications on the internet fall outside of its protections? I'm pleased that this rulemaking that we're voting on today answers many of those questions and puts those debates to rest. This rule and the accompanying explanation justification make some points very clearly, and this will be repetitive of some of the things Commissioner Dickerson said. First, the staffing, technology, and design costs for making a free internet communication are not regulated. Those communications and their input costs are not public communications. They aren't contributions, they aren't expenditures, and they aren't independent expenditures, period. The commission is not regulating as public communications the content created by influencers and other internet content creators that generate their own political messages or share the political messages of others to their own audiences, even if they're paid to do so. They aren't subject to the regulations that govern traditional advertising. And that leads to the third and final point, which is the commission's regulation of political communications on the internet is limited to traditional paid advertising, means payments to a platform to disseminate or increase the viewership of a communication on that platform. That is the rule from the commission's internet disclaimers rulemaking from last year, and it's being clarified and solidified today. I've been a longtime advocate for the internet exemption and for free speech on the internet long before since I got to the commission. I'm pleased that we're taking this step today, not only to reaffirm the internet exemption, but to further build on it. The internet's special ability to act as a bastion for free speech and free exchange of ideas has only grown since 2006 as companies and individuals come up with more and newer ways to communicate and express ourselves. I'm proud that the commission is committing itself once again to a hands-off approach to the internet and to this important tool for free speech. Thanks, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Any further? Commissioner Monk.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I started this rulemaking in 2013 thinking it was going to be non-controversial and therefore easy to do. And that was plainly not a well-founded assumption on my part. And there were many years when, frankly, previous commissioners did not want to deal with this document because much of it is long and tedious. So I very much appreciate that my colleagues today were willing to put in the effort, and it was a lot of effort, to sweat the details and to help us to update our regulations, which really, you know, if you go into the weeds on this, you'll see some stuff that plainly very desperately needed to be updated. And I think it was important to get the word promoted into the regulation. I was disappointed when that didn't happen last year. And given the way advertising works on the internet, to not encompass that kind of boosting, payment to boost a communication on the internet, I think really would have been a serious lack in our regulation. So because it does a lot of really good, useful things, I am going to vote for this today. I am going to have to respectfully differ with my colleagues on an issue that I regret we are not addressing today, and that is payments to what I'll say for shorthand are the social media influencers to spread political commentary on the internet. And I want to be clear that nobody is suggesting that they shouldn't be able to speak their messages to their audiences. They absolutely should. And of course, given their large audiences, political actors want to take advantage of that. And they want to be able to work with those influencers to help get their messages across. There's no problem with any of that. The problem that I see is that we're creating a gaping loophole in our regulations when it comes to transparency, because the core mission of this agency is to disclose money in politics. Say whatever you want, but if somebody is paying you to put out their political message, then the American public deserves to know. As the Supreme Court has held, transparency enables the electorate to make informed decisions and give proper weight to different speakers and messages. Maybe these influencers' fans wouldn't care if they knew they were being paid to promote the messages that they are putting forth. Maybe they would, but I think they're entitled to know. And when the commission in 2006 looked at the internet and exempted, for example, bloggers, said they didn't have any special obligation to tell people when they were being paid, we were in a different world. Those bloggers didn't have the audience that social media influencers have today. These content creators on the internet, this is now a multi-billion dollar industry. This isn't random people sitting in their bedroom pecking away at their keyboards. These are serious business people who are very savvy and are making a lot of money from their content creation and from spreading their messages on the internet. And money is in fact what we are interested in, not stopping anybody from speaking, just making sure that the money is disclosed. And it is no longer the case that we have to worry that, you know, these are a bunch of unsophisticated actors and they're going to be, you know, caught up in the net of regulations that they would have no way of understanding they would be subject to. Content creators are subject to regulation now by other regulatory bodies. The FTC makes them put disclaimers on when they are promoting a brand of toothpaste or a dietary supplement or any other product. And I think that we would have been well advised to have included the same kind of requirement for a disclaimer in our rules. Sadly, that is, we did not have the votes to do that. I regret that, but as I said, there's a lot of useful stuff in this regulation nonetheless, including in the long and the boring parts. So with some regret, I am still going to support this regulation, and I am very happy that after all these years, it's finally going to get done.
Any further discussion? Motion.
Madam Chair, in what would probably be a joint motion if permitted under Robert's rules, I'd like to move the adoption in Regulation 2013-1, Technological Modernization. Move the adoption of agenda document number 23-29.
Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Motion passes unanimously. And thank you to the Dickerson Broussard team for Broussard Dickerson team. Before D. And we will only use last name. Thank you guys for getting us here. Your ability to navigate these processes for rulemaking is truly incredible and has really guided this year. And next up, we'll be talking about our draft legislative recommendations for everybody. All of our 10 viewers can certainly look in our website for our draft. I think it was dozens. I'm sorry, Mr. Vice Chair. Dozens. Mr. Pugh?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Good morning, everyone. Commissioners, before you today for your approval are 17 draft legislative recommendations for 2023 listed in Agenda Document 23-27-A. We have one amendment to the document. Congress has passed legislation extending the administrative fine program for 10 years until 2033. And the bill is at the White House waiting for the president's approval. So the commissioners agreed that the legislative recommendation related to the expiration of that program should not be repeated this year. And that recommendation should be deleted from the document. Also note one of our guests today, her work is part of what got this done, and we owe our thanks to her for that. The remaining recommendations are divided into three groups.
The first group of the highest priority legislative recommendations include a new recommendation calling for an itemization threshold for conduit contributions. Two others are related to the foreign national prohibition, which is a continuing priority for the commission. And finally, increasing the compensation for FEC commissioners, the staff director, and the general counsel is also in the highest priority group. Other priority legislative recommendations include nine related to the Federal Election Campaign Act. And then the third group includes three other improvements recommended by the commission. Once the commission has approved these legislative recommendations, we will provide them to the administration and to Congress. Developing these recommendations started with potential topics suggested by FEC staff and commissioners. I'd like to thank the chair for making more time for this project this year and making that a priority for the commission. And I'd also like to thank all the commissioners and, as always, my colleagues from throughout the agency for their contributions to the legislative recommendations. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. And I'm going to kick off the discussion yourself here of this. I want to thank everybody involved in pushing admin fines across the line. Many of my colleagues had discussions on the Hill and with important players and influencers to get this program through the door. I am so grateful, and it is going to do many wonderful things so that we have this next 10 years to continue on this program that has been so incredibly successful. One of the things that has been interesting about the way that we do these legislative recommendations is it's a really great way for commissioners and staff to get across things that they think have changed. And some of those don't get enough votes from the commissioners to go into our legislative recommendations now, but they may in the future. And many of these are jumping off points for us to have discussions, to be thinking critically about things that can benefit the agency and benefit the regulatory community and benefit the public and the voters. I am excited that we are continually expanding this list of legislative recommendations, and that folks on the Hill are open and look towards our recommendations and can trust that we are putting together those things that we find to be the most important as a group. Further discussion.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I also appreciate all the efforts of staff and my colleagues in putting this together. It's a package. I'm sure we each have our favorites in the package. Some of these I feel more strongly about than others. But one thing that I very much appreciate about it is that the commission has made a decision that we will only forward recommendations that have the unanimous support of the commission. And I think that's a really important principle, and it makes it a more persuasive document when it gets up to the Hill. Because if the six of us can agree on something, then I think that sometimes helps people on the Hill to say, well, maybe that is worth doing. And indeed, we recently saw the House on a bipartisan basis move forward on a bill based on actually one of these recommendations in the foreign national field. And that was very exciting. You know, it's a bipartisan priority here, and it was a bipartisan priority there. And I hope that it will ultimately become a bipartisan priority across Congress and may actually pass into law. So that's great precedent. And it's nice to see that people actually read the documents that we send over there.
Thanks, Madam Chair. I'll be brief. Let me join the chorus in expressing my thanks and appreciation on the admin fines. Congressman Morelli, Senator Klobuchar, and Senator Fisher and their staffs obviously were the ones doing all the laboring over there, but it's a very big accomplishment for the agency. It's a 10-year reauthorization, which is twice as long, I think, as any previous authorization we've ever gotten for this program, which I think initially used to be reauthorized in 2-year increments, maybe. And so I take that as a strong sign of confidence in the program from Congress that they have given us such a long runway to continue that program. Commissioner Weintraub referenced, we all have our favorites, but I agree that it's important to emphasize that, yes, these are all unanimously supported by all six commissioners. A single commissioner could strike one of these off the list, but they're supported by all six. In fact, arguably more, given that some of these predate, you know, earlier commissioners voted for these legislative recommendations too, to the extent they've been repeated. And I appreciate the staff on the Hill that take them seriously. I want to highlight one, just one, that's a new one that's important to me, which is a recommendation to Congress to extend the time period that the commission has to act on a complaint before the complaining party is entitled to file a delay suit under the Federal Election Campaign Act, from 120 day period to 240 days. The act provides for these delay suits, as we call them, to ensure that parties that file complaints have a mechanism to ensure that they're not ignored or sat on by the commission. And I think that's an important feature of the act. But the fact of the matter is that 50 years after FECA was passed, the increasing complexity of the law, the increasing sophistication of the complaints, and the resource challenges that the agency has faced for a prolonged period of time mean that 100-day period, frankly, is no longer very realistic. And it has become instead often a tool for particularly sophisticated complainants to use litigation as a means for getting priority for their own complaints over maybe other complaints that came through the door earlier. I think 240 days is a more reasonable timeline given the change in circumstances in the legal landscape. And it's a legislative recommendation that I'm certainly going to be advocating for and that I think Congress should very seriously consider. Thanks, Madam Chair.
Other discussion?
Madam Chair. Briefly, I mean, I appreciate the turn of phrase that we each have our favorites. Educated observers will be unsurprised that I feel pretty strongly about indexing things for inflation generally. I think it's nothing to do with this agency and everything to do with basic economics. And that I think it is important for Congress to update its statutes in a way that reflect binding case law so that the rules on the books are not affirmatively misleading the American people on a daily basis. That said, I just wanted to quickly add my thanks, especially to Allison Tuck of Senate Rules, who previously of my staff and was instrumental in obtaining, well, I guess we had half a generation's runway on the administrative fine program, which is very good. And at some risk of being a bit of a downer, I will say that I hope that in time that I will live to see it made permanent. I think it is a uncontroversial and excellent program. And I hope it is not forgotten and that we're not here scrambling in 8 years. Well, I won't be here scrambling 8 years. Then no one's here scrambling in 8 years to get this adjusted. So my thanks in particular to her and also my colleagues for bringing this over.
Any further discussion? Motion.
Thank you, Madam Chair. With respect to draft legislative recommendations for 2023, I move approval of agenda document number 23-27-A, subject to the edits discussed by staff at the table.
Any discussion on the motion? All in favor?
Aye.
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 Motion passes unanimously. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you.
So that concludes our substantive business for today. But before we move on to electing our officers for the upcoming year, it is tradition to take a few minutes to recognize our longer serving staff who have hit very impressive milestones at commission and who have agreed to be recognized. So at 20 years, we have Anafina Wallace, Rodney McKinley, and Lewan Dean. 25 years, Robert Knopp, Greg Mueller, Patricia Orock, and Kevin Gealy. 30 years, Alicia Morrell. 35 years, Kevin Sally, Candace Sally, Donna Smith, Kimberly Hart, and Michael Moody. 40 years, Jim Jones. We've got two at 45 years, Robin Kelly and Ida Rivas. These are incredible milestones to reach, and I am so grateful, and many of us are so grateful for all of their incredible service to the commission. So I'll also take a moment of personal privilege here to discuss a few of the things that we've done this year. We have held two hearings
One in regards to our audit procedures and one around the candidate salaries regulation that we just passed. After years of internal hand-wringing and external frustrations, we successfully revamped our audit processes. We jump-started our hiring processes. We had an oversight hearing. We successfully advocated for and Congress passed our admin fines extension. We signed an MOU with the Department of Justice that establishes the guidelines for the FEC and DOJ to share information and advance the missions of both agencies. We just passed two critical regulations, one of which will hopefully encourage and enable more people to run for office and make a real difference here. Our staff has been hard at work updating our FEC file system to a cloud-based system that takes into account many of the comments and complaints the commission has heard through the years. And that is in part due to the budget we were able to receive this year after years of not requesting significant increases to our budget that were necessary. We finally did so and continue to do so this agency can get the resources it needs to function. And one of the things I'm most proud of is that we talk amongst ourselves now on the commission to try to reach consensuses where possible. There have been a number of matters that would have split had we not reached across the aisle to find areas of agreement. We are six very different people with different experiences and viewpoints on thorny issues that are at the heart of the First Amendment and politics. But there are many things we agree on, and those issues can only be discovered when we talk to each other. I've had the privilege of sitting in on staff meetings across the agency over the last year to acknowledge and thank the agency staff for their work. And I have been consistently impressed by their professionalism and dedication. Despite working with antiquated systems and limited resources, our staff continue to bring energy and creativity every day to further our mission. From our enterprise architecture and operational support team, finding innovative ways to process and view campaign finance reports, to our alternative dispute resolution team developing a remarkable case tracking tool, to our attorneys keeping up to speed on the rapidly changing legal landscape, to our information division creating engaging, cost-effective educational programs. Our staff work diligently to support the FEC's mission of ensuring transparency, compliance, and fair enforcement of the federal campaign finance laws. I want to thank my staff for all of that they do. I appreciate them and their work. To my fellow commissioners, thank you for your advice as I navigated jumping into the chair seat soon after joining the commission. Thank you to the agency staff for bearing with me as I figured this all out. There are also a few people who are not generally in the public eye, but who have been essential to the functioning of this agency. And they include Tiff, who fixes all of our problems, Larry Calvert, who helps us through everything, and who I look to all of the time. Thank you, Mr. Calvert. To Laura, Vicki, and Maureen from the Secretary's office, thank you for running the show and the folks in the control room who really make us function. And to Lauren Lean, who many of us, who's not in the public eye very often, but does more to help this agency work than any of us actually know. So with that, it is time to elect our leadership for next year.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And that was really an encouraging summary of the year. And I share your appreciation to all the staff to help us have accomplished those things. It is my privilege to nominate Vice Chair Sean Cooksey to serve as the chair of the Federal Election Commission for calendar year 2024. Commissioner Cooksey has been in the private sector and in the public sector, and in the public sector has served in all three branches of government. So, you know, I didn't clerk. He's one up on me on branches of government, but it is it's a pretty impressive series of accomplishments. He worked in the Senate. He clerked for, I think it's the Fifth Circuit, and worked for a leading law firm, and since he has been here, has been courteous and helpful, and I am frequently impressed by his incisive legal reasoning. So I'm looking forward to working with him as he takes the helm for 2024. And I move that the commission elect Sean Cooksey as chair of the FEC for 2024.
Any discussion of the motion? Before I move to votes, I've tried to institute a, let's not talk for the sake of talking policy as chair here. But I do want to say that working with Commissioner Cooksey this year has been wonderful. We've had a great relationship across our offices and with each other, where we've talked things through, figured out ways to get past roadblocks. And this year and all of that we have accomplished would not have been possible without him. So thank you for getting us there. And with that, all in favor? Aye.
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 Motion passes unanimously.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And thank you to all my colleagues for your confidence. Madam Chair, it's my privilege to nominate Commissioner Ellen Weintraub to serve as vice chair for calendar year 2024. I think it's fair to say Commissioner Weintraub really needs no introduction. she's served on the commission since 2002. First recess appointment in December 2002, and then full Senate confirmation shortly thereafter. But prior to her time on the commission, Commissioner Weintraub too has a lot of experience, both in the private and the public sector. We are the two former Hill Rats of the commission. Commissioner Weintraub had a distinguished tenure on the House Ethics Committee. She also worked in private practice at two top law firms, both in DC and in New York, if I have that right. She brings a stellar academic background to the commission as well, with degrees from Harvard and Yale. And of course, Commissioner Weintraub is no stranger to the center of the dais, having served in leadership many times before in her tenure here. She needs no tutorials, no orientations for the responsibilities that come with being vice chair. And I too have all admired Commissioner Weintraub's voluminous encyclopedic knowledge of the law that we administer, and more importantly, from my perspective, the history of the building, the operations of the building, every nook and cranny that she has been able to experience here. So I'm looking forward to benefiting from that experience during my chair year, and it's my privilege to nominate Commissioner Weintraub for that position.
Any discussion of the motion?
I'm sure. Thank you, and I appreciate the vice chair's gracious words, which I join, but I have some additional thoughts. The votes for chair and vice chair are traditionally routine, because they follow from two well-established customs of the commission. First, and most essentially, the chair and vice chair, separate offices that must by law be held by different parties, rotate annually between the parties. Second, that each party's caucus selects its nominee for that position that it will hold that year. But there's a third custom, that each commissioner serves as vice chair and chair once during his or her term. And that tradition is in tension with the vice chair's motion. It's appropriate to have this conversation here today, where Commissioner Broussard's outsized contribution to the work of this agency are on full display. Regulations that lay dormant for decades under other commissioners are being passed, including priorities of the Democratic Party. Real bipartisan compromise has been happening over the last 3 years after a long winter of recrimination, ad hominem attack, and dysfunction. This takes nothing from Commissioner Weintraub's long and distinguished service, but this would be her third time as vice chair, and if she remains on the commission and is nominated, her fourth as chair come 2025. Meanwhile, Commissioner Broussard has never served as vice chair. Commissioner Broussard was called upon to chair immediately upon joining the agency, a distinction she shares with Commissioner Weintraub back in 2003. And she carried that heavy burden gracefully, without self-promotion, cleared a historic enforcement docket, and set the commission on the path to where it is today. In my view, she did not thereby forfeit her chance to serve as vice chair. Simply put, it's her turn, and she would do a fine job. My Democratic colleagues have instead suggested Commissioner Weintraub, who has served for more than 20 years and has had many opportunities for leadership. I think that decision is an error. Frankly, I find it inappropriate to leapfrog Commissioner Broussard in this manner, and I cannot support it. I respect my colleagues' prerogative, but they are making a mistake. If the motion should fail, I intend to nominate Commissioner Broussard and would encourage her to accept the position to which she is well suited. Thank you.
Madam Chair. Thank you, Madam Chair. We find ourselves in a unique spot today due primarily to failed leadership in the executive branch to exercise its statutorily granted authority to nominate people to this body for consideration by the Senate. The last administration made this a priority, and the Senate leadership at that time took quick action to fulfill its role at advice and consent. If the present administration were to focus on how campaigns are funded and who's donating, then this issue that we find ourselves facing right now would not be occurring. My vote here is in no way to be construed as a comment on Commissioner Weintraub, her abilities, or her unquestioned commitment to administration here at the FEC or her service to the American people. Instead, my vote here today is a call for the White House to do its job and replace commissioners who, like myself, are out of term. The system here works best when the rules are followed by everyone. In fact, our job here is to make sure that candidates and elected officials follow the rules of the game. I hope that my vote here today will highlight a long overlooked rule that needs to be resurrected. The White House needs to make a priority of nominating individuals to serve on this commission so that we can have commissioners who are fully within their terms and can exercise their authority without question. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Further discussion.
I will just say that this is not how I had hoped that that the last meeting of the year would go. This is usually not how this goes. And it is unfortunate that this is happening right now, but we will continue to talk with each other, get past this, as we continue to make this agency a functioning place where we can discuss real issues and have conversations in advance so that we can serve this agency's mission. So with that, we have a motion. All in favor?
Aye.
All opposed?
No.
I abstain.
The motion passes 4-1 with one abstention with Commissioners Broussard, Weintraub, Cooksey, and myself in favor. Commissioner Traynor opposed, and Commissioner Dickerson abstaining. Mr. Staff Director, are there any management or administrative matters that need to be discussed today? Hold on.
Madam Chair, can I have a point of personal privilege?
Sure.
I didn't want to save this for the end. I just want to make a quick comment about your chair here, if I could.
Sorry. Thanks.
Cut off.
I need that after that.
I appreciate your comments about me. I want to reciprocate them because I too have very much enjoyed our year in the center of the dais. You're right. I agree with you that all six of us are different. You and I are very different, but there's a lot of things in this job that we agree on. And more importantly, even when we disagree about the substance, we never do so in a disagreeable way. And I've enjoyed our phone calls, our collaboration, talking about our, you know, trouble with our small kids and things like that, and all the different challenges we face as working parents, and getting through a lot of the thorny knots that come up as part of this job. And again, trying to get to four votes, that's the goal, right? It's trying to collaborate. So I just want to thank you. I think your remarks about all the things we've done for this year speak for themselves in terms of the list of accomplishments. I think it's remarkable, really, especially if you consider it in light of recent history of the commission, how much we've gotten done. And I think there's even more that we can do. And so I'm sure I'll be relying on your wisdom and your experience in that role as I take the chair for next year. I have a small gift. Of the things that you listed off of our accomplishments this year, I think I have a memento of your favorite, which is our oversight hearing.
This is a an official photo, a government photo. And as a result of a government photo, there's no copyright. I didn't have to pay a licensing fee, but memorializing our swearing in front of the Committee on House Administration. So I hope you look on that photo fondly, mostly because it represents something in the past. So thank you very much again for your for this year, and I really appreciate it.
Thank you. Thank you so much. So Mr. Let's see if I finally get it right for the first time ever. Mr. Staff Director, are there any management or administrative matters that need to be discussed today?
Madam Chair, there are no such matters.
Thank you. Thank you for not springing one on me. And that concludes our open agenda. Thank you.